Body, Mind, Spirit Radio, your live connection to the information for a healthy body, an enlightened mind, and a renewed spirit.
Good morning, everybody. Today is June 23rd, 2014, and look at that, we are now in summer. Today we have a wonderful guest here with us today. Her name is Aluna Michaels, and we will be interviewing her for In Touch Interviews. And she has a great background in astrology and counseling, and she actually does write the horoscopes that you see every single month in the Body, Mind, Spirit Guide. So without further ado, I would like to bring on Aluna. Hi, Aluna.
Hi, Courtney. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you.
Well, I know that you've worked for several years in astrology. Would you like to give us a little bit of a background on how you got into astrology and how you work with that?
Absolutely. Well, several years is an understatement. My mother started learning astrology when I was 3 years old in 1969. And because I'm an Aquarius, I didn't want a babysitter, and I used to go to classes with her. So I started learning astrology when I was three. And it was fortunate that my mother had teachers. I grew up in Boston, Massachusetts, and there were very famous astrologers, Francis Sequoyan, Robert Hand, Tracy Marks, Caroline Casey, Isabel Hickey. I mean, really famous people in the astrology world were my mother's friends and teachers. And so I grew up with these people like extended family. And so it's always been there. I've always had that understanding of astrology and you know, fairly deep. I was able to conceptualize more than just the sun sign stuff, and you know, it just was always part of my mindset. So I started doing readings pretty early. I'd always have friends in school ask me questions about boys or something, and you know, the charts and stuff, and at least the signs. So in a way, I've been doing readings since I was very, very young. But I started reading professionally maybe at 16 years old, and it became my full-on profession while I was in college, and has been ever since. So it's been an interesting ride that I've always tried to say. I didn't think astrology was going to be my full profession because it wasn't my mother's full profession. So I just kept trying to do other things, and life kept leading me back to the astrology, and I love it, and I'm grateful to help other people, especially to help people see things more deeply about their lives in a way that astrology can reach for them very quickly and give them solutions very quickly.
Now, you're bilingual?
No. We were chatting earlier, and I feel that it is like being bilingual when you grow up with astrology, because to be able to say like, oh, I'm a Capricorn with Mercury square Pluto, and then people go, oh yeah, you know, that's a language, you know. So it was like when someone grows up with two languages in the house, that you never have to learn that language, you just know it. That's kind of how it is with me with astrology, and I feel that makes me fairly unique as an astrologer. It wasn't like I started learning when I was 20 or 30. You know, I started talking and learning astrology at the same time, kind of thing.
Now, I guess this is an interesting question, but do you feel like that maybe makes you stand out a little bit more than other individuals? I mean, I growing up in a house surrounded by astrology, you know, I find that very interesting. It was every day like, you know, don't do that, Mercury's retrograde.
and that leads me into another thing. I don't want to slam certain types of astrology, but, you know, in the 60s and early 70s, astrology was really wanting to be proven as valid. You know, it was very counterculture, obviously. And, you know, people like, say, my mother's teacher, Francis Sequoyan, it was seen as, they kind of did things sort of fatalistically to sort of prove, like, you know, if you're having a Mars transit, you could get in a car accident. Well, I suppose you could. Or you could fall down and hurt your ankle or something. But that's very basic stuff and very limited. As the 70s progressed, we got more astrologers that were interested in psychological development in astrology, and then even spiritual evolution astrology that came even later in transpersonal astrology that blended astrology with the work of Carl Jung and things like this. And so astrology has evolved over the decades. And So I feel like the fact that I grew up with basic astrology was like I wanted more. You know, I wanted more of that psychology understanding and spiritual understanding. Because for me, it's a given. Astrology works. You know, you don't need to prove it to me. I grew up with it. So in that way, it is unique. And it is unique. I don't want to be like, oh, I'm the best astrologer in the world or something. But I think it does give me a very unique perspective to have that long of knowledge of it. And I will say this too, that as an Aquarius, I am rebellious. And, you know, there's only so much you can take when you're a teenager of your mother, like, you know that friend of yours, the Leo girl, and it's like, her name is Stephanie. She drives me crazy. She couldn't remember the names of my friends, remember their charts. And it just started to be like, oh, brother, stupid astrology, you know? This is dumb. And, you know, I went through that phase, and then it was like I kept on my own coming back to certain things about depth astrology with transits happening, with shifts I was going through emotionally. And I knew I was having, you know, Pluto on my moon or whatever. And it's like, darn, this stuff really works. But I tossed it aside because it was what my mom did, you know, and came back around in my own way to it. Like, this is real, you know? So I was kind of a cynic. I was forced into it, then became cynical, and then reconnected with it in a deeper way. So.
Now, how do you feel like astrology has evolved? Because, you know, you talk about the 60s and 70s, and they're trying to make it valid, and they're trying to prove it. How do you feel like it has evolved over the years, and how do you feel like it's going to continue to evolve?
Well, I feel like instead of just being like, I don't know, let's say Mars is a planet of, can be a planet of aggression or being irritable, you know. And so say somebody has Sun square Mars, you could say that person's a jerk. You know, they're just difficult to get along with. It's like the psychology would be, you know, how does this person access their anger? How does this person access their energy field? Even is this person like have an allergy that's triggering their body to be irritable, you know? They have a gluten allergy, so he's in a bad mood. You know, you can go deeper in this kind of thing. So there's been an evolution of that instead of just like, that's a bad angle to have and you're stuck with it, was kind of the attitude coming out of, you know, traditional astrology in the 60s. And then when we move more into the spiritual, it's like maybe if people believe in past lives, why does this person come in with such a chip on their shoulder to have Sun square Mars? How does that person connect with higher fields of energy? You know, maybe they need to get into martial arts, using energy wisely, you know, that this is a gift they came in with strength, and they can make it an asset as instead of seeming like a problem. And I feel like as humanity is continuing to unfold in consciousness, we can grasp deeper meanings of the planets. And that's an interesting thing, too, that people will say, and I hope this isn't going too tangential, but the final planet we see with the naked eye is Saturn. But then, you know, in the 1700s, we discovered Uranus, and 1800s, Neptune, and in the 1930s, Pluto, which we still consider a planet as astrologers. And people say, well, what about that? You know, there's a new planet suddenly. Well, it's human consciousness expanding to understand that intensity of those outer planets. Uranus is the planet of revolution, and we discovered Uranus during the French Revolution, during the American Revolution, right at that time, and it was about human rights and democracy and all those things actually that Uranus does represent came about during that time in history. You know, and then we see that play out. Neptune came about during the spiritual revolution, so to speak, of the 1800s with, you know, all those spiritual movements and seances and all that. And Neptune represents spiritual growth. Pluto came about in the 30s when we were dealing with fascism and atomic energy, which Pluto represents those sorts of things, intense power and the power of the tiny atom to destroy the world, the potential energy of things for good or for bad, and power issues about fascism and things like this. So it's like as humanity evolves to take in these levels of consciousness, we discover more planets sometimes that represent, that say this has been previously veiled, And now it's, you can grasp it, humanity. So here's this other planet to integrate into your lives and consciousness. So in that way, astrology continues to evolve too with planetary discoveries. You know, they say there's more planets beyond Pluto we haven't seen yet. So that'll represent another level of humanity's capacity to take on personal growth and collective growth. Is that too complicated of an answer?
No, actually, that's a perfect answer. I think it's very perfect. But it, in the same sense, now it gives me another question. I guess my question would be, so as we, you know, as we find more planets and as we evolve and, you know, as astrology moves forward, where do you find us moving forward today? You know, do you find that because astrology has evolved so far in the spiritual realm that we are now progressing more spiritually, you know, where do you find maybe we're going to go this year or next year, you know, where is the world's direction? I guess that's my question.
And we look at those sorts of things as, you know, for right now we're not discovering other planets, but let's say the planet Pluto, for an example, excuse me, because Pluto has about a 300-year orbit, and it stays in the sign for a fairly long time. Right now it's in Capricorn. And so Pluto represents power, for sure, and personal power as well as world power kind of thing. And Capricorn is about a sense of responsibility. And so as Pluto is in Capricorn now, Pluto's maybe halfway through Capricorn, so we have another, you know, maybe 8 years of it or so. I don't have my ephemeris in front of me, my book that tells me where the planets are. But let's just say another 8 to 10 years of Pluto in Capricorn, that it's about people assuming personal responsibility for themselves. And that can be, you know, there's a movement spiritually, let's say, about that if I take yoga classes, you know, is it good enough for me just to go to yoga and then, you know, give somebody the finger when I'm driving away from the class because they cut me off? Or how is my yoga going in through my life? What's my personal duty as somebody, if I'm trying to create world peace, you know, if I want world peace, what am I doing? Am I just going to yoga and then saying, hey, buzz off, you person in the car next to me? You know, so like Pluto and Capricorn is like that sort of thing about personal responsibility spiritually, that the collective comes from each person doing their part, which is a Capricorn concept. There's also financial duty. What was interesting, let's just say this is more of a world thing, but when Pluto was in Sagittarius, and Pluto can also be about financial power because it's such about power. Sagittarius is very carpe diem, you know, hey, whatever, go for it, have a loan, have a mortgage, you know. And then when Pluto did move into Capricorn is when we had the economic crash. And Capricorn's like, let's be responsible people. You know, it's not as whimsical as Sagittarius. Pluto and Sag did a lot for opening our minds spiritually. A lot of this yoga movement came up during Pluto and Sag. So that was a great thing that Pluto and Sagittarius did, but financially it left a little, you know, was a little too whimsical, right? And so we say, okay, now the universe is teaching us to have personal duties with money. And which is, again, a Capricorn concept, then that's bringing us into Pluto in Aquarius, which is about world community, you know? And so if everyone has their own side of the road clean, so to speak, we can all work together as one. So I think the Pluto in Capricorn is helping us evolve toward more of this Aquarian age, so to speak, you know? But those outer planets are always working on us in a big way. Subtly, but a mass movement of consciousness. And is that clear?
Yeah, so you feel like, you know, just with the way we're going within an Aquarian age, that, you know, we're more based on community and opening up spiritually. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And I think that when we move toward, let's say, Pluto and Aquarius in a number of years, that because Capricorn is very much about the basics in some way. It's like, okay, like deal with your money stuff, maybe deal with your, you know, whatever sort of basic things so you function better. When you function well with yourself, you're going to function better in a group. And Aquarius is about Aquarius is a funny sign because it's about being unique, but it's about being in the group. So it's about each person's uniqueness enhancing the group. You know, it's not about losing your identity in the group. It's about this group wouldn't be the group without everybody and their quirks and their interesting pieces of life. You know, it's kind of like Modern Family kind of concept. You know, everybody's coming from other directions and have different sorts of lifestyles, but it's all making the family. So that idea is sort of what we're moving toward. But in order to get there, you have to become, a spiritual adult with Pluto and Capricorn, you know, not blaming others and saying, you know what, if I'm not happy, what's it with me? What do I need to clear out in myself? And, you know, or do I need to set limits with people if it is something going on outside? But it's like, what do I need to do? And feeling that empowerment from within, you know, I can create a consciousness shift on the planet, you know. And then when we get together with that Pluto and Aquarius, it's the machine is in motion, you know what I mean? We're used to cooperating, and I think we're going to see more and more of that as we go, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I agree. I think that with, you know, everything in the metaphysical field becoming a little bit more open and a little bit more popular, and people are actually considering studying it and looking into mm-hmm. it, I feel like we're moving into an age of more open awareness. So I totally agree with you.
You know, you made me think of when I was talking about Pluto going into Capricorn. I mean, I know it was like the economic crash and all that was scary for people, but I remember going to the bank and they had an ad up and it was like a little cardboard thing that was hanging from the ceiling about getting a loan or something. And the premise of the ad for the bank was like, we make it so easy to get a loan, you know. And they had a picture of an African-American guy in a suit in a lotus posture with the mudra hands and he was levitating. And all the people were going, whoa, like, you know, so the idea was, you know, he's in the suit and he got his loan and he was cool about it. But I looked at the picture and I thought, wow, first of all, that the black person can be in the suit and make money is a concept that, you know, wouldn't be in the 60s or something. And the idea that seeing somebody in a yoga mudra pose is so common of a concept, we know what that ad's trying to say. I thought, wow, Pluto and Capricorn, it's in the bank. You know, Capricorn's all about the money and stuff. And it was like, this is a common enough concept. Just have that on that little thing hanging in the bank. And every random person knows exactly what that means. It means that person's at peace. And it was like, wow, wow. You know, it really struck me. Like, that wouldn't have, and that was, again, the work of Pluto in Sagittarius was making that even more every day, that idea of yoga and meditation and all that, you know? So I think that's those movements of humanity are pretty interesting. When it trickles down into the pop culture like that, you know, you've got something, you know.
Well, it's always interesting to see things like that because then it validates what you're already feeling or you're already picking up on. And then it becomes a commonality, which clearly validates what you're picking up on. But talk to us a little bit about psychological astrology.
Yeah, and that's really my thing. I mean, because I know there's people do world astrology and financial astrology and all that kind of stuff, political. But for me, it's really one-on-one. And again, maybe it goes back to that concept for me. If you can get one person happy and centered and on their spiritual goals, then that's just, you know, one person at a time makes the world. I think that one of the things with astrology is we are born with our chart. You know, our charts are chart. But again, this is what's different about the basic astrology is kind of like, you're stuck with it, your life sucks. You know, it's like, no, it's like, why do I have this? What is this challenge spiritually for me to strengthen this part of me? Or what gift do I have within myself, which could be a part of your chart that's, quote, good, that helps you overcome the bad part, you know? So you can show people through astrology, this is where your strengths are and this is how you can overcome a weakness or make a weakness work for you or something that seemed like a weakness doesn't have to be one anymore. Looking at your chart with other people is very big. And boy, I have people, I mean, any good astrologer could do this, but some people say to me, you know, I've been to therapy for 6 months and I come to see you and in 10 minutes you know exactly what the problem is and you solved it, you know, or I gave them an insight that was like, their therapist had just started to scratch the surface with something with their parents and how they're bringing that to their marriage and it's affecting stuff or something, you know, and it's like, oh, well, it's just right there because of blah, blah in your chart. You know, I can see, it's like, okay, you know, you've got this going on and this tendency of you is triggering this other person, making a bad pattern, and this is how we could resolve that. So the interpersonal stuff is, to me, really important with astrology, and the psychology of subtle triggers in people is very, for me, easy to see in a chart.
That's
so I like that. I'm sorry?
I was going to say, that's very interesting, because when most people look at astrology, they only see, you know, well, this website, this astrologer, this book, this, you know, this, all of this helped me. I'm not supposed to be with a Leo. I'm never, ever, ever supposed to be with a Leo. But yet, here I am married to a Leo. But you're saying that if you can go deeper in a chart and you can look at those, you know, those different elements, that things can change or evolve, or you can get down to why it is the way it is.
Absolutely. And just thanks for mentioning that thing about the Leo deal or whatever. It's like, okay, so when you read something like that, like, I'm a Scorpio, I should never be with a Leo. Well, that's just saying your sun sign. And it's so not true. I mean, there are some signs that some people might feel like the energy of a sign is irritating to them or whatever. But, you know, if you're a Scorpio and you're saying, I can't be with Leos, well, you can go out and meet a Cancer and they're supposed to be perfect for you, and the person has five planets in Leo because there's more than just the sun sign. They could have a whole mess of planets in Leo. Or their rising sign could be Leo. You wouldn't know that till you get their time of birth, you know, because that's how we figure that out. Or you could have a whole bunch of planets in the house of Leo, which, again, isn't figured out until you know the time and place of birth. So there's all – and what's funny is that if you don't know your own chart, you can be a Scorpio and say, oh, I hate Leos. I don't like Leos. And then if you get your chart done, you might have Leo rising and five planets in Leo's house, so the joke's on you, you know. So it's too simple to just say that with astrology. Yeah, we've got to look deeper. And one certain Leo, like you could say, oh, I had it. My ex-husband's a Leo, my dad's a Leo, and I never got along with him. You can meet the next Leo person, and they have very different setup in their chart, and they're actually a major healer for you. And if you were looking at astrology so simplistically, you could bypass that person. So we have to look at the chart as a whole and how it's interacting with your chart as a whole, you know. And then also the timing of when you're meeting these people because of the transits, which are these temporary energies that illuminate the chart in certain ways. So it's just so deep and complex. Yeah. There's so much to it, which is why it's good to have an astrologer and not just read, you know, even good horoscopes are good, but there's so much more going on, you know?
Yeah, it's funny that you should talk more about that, because my husband's actually a Leo and I'm a Cancer, and
okay.
I dated a lot of Leos growing up, and I was never really attracted to their energy. It just didn't click for me until I met my husband, and I actually took a look at his chart because I was like, you do not make sense to me as Leo. It just does not make any sense. It's more than just your rising sign. It's more than just, you know, the sign you're in when you were born. That makes up your personality and makes up who you are uniquely. So
yes.
I always find it interesting when people come to me and they say, you know, I'll never date a Taurus again. Never, ever, ever, ever. And I'm like, yeah, but, you know, that's not all they are. You know, there's more to them than that.
Exactly. And the other thing is so let's say twins, you know, because, of course, when someone's born the same day you are, even same day, same year, their chart's going to be, I mean, it's going to be very similar, but also going to be very different. They're born another place. They're born another time of day. But even with twins, and you say, especially with C-section twins, it's like they're 2 minutes apart or something, you know, as opposed to an hour or so like they used to be when they're natural. What we found is that one twin will use a part of the chart more strongly than the other. They sort of divvy it up, and they have strengths, like one will kind of lean more this way and one more toward the other. That's always very intriguing with that. So they are creating their own individuality, even though they're sharing a chart almost to the, again, if they're C-section, it's almost the exact same chart. So that's always interesting. But pretty much, you know, twins aside, And you can go into different ways that even twins are completely different with the number, the degrees of the chart. But, you know, everyone's chart is pretty much like a snowflake. You know, it is very, very different. And you can meet people who have things in common with you and you really, hey, you know, we're both Libras or we both have Sun conjunct Neptune and Capricorn and we're so alike. But there's other ways you're going to be different from those people. And it's always very intriguing to me with astrology. It's just so nuanced, you know.
Well, I know that, you know, in chart, a lot of people always go for relationships. You know, am I going to get married? How many kids am I going to have? Do I have trauma in my chart? You know, is my chart bad? You know, what are the chart differences?
Well, it's always hard people say, is my chart bad? And usually I have found people that have had, they read a book or they had a, you know, an old-timey type astrologer say some, you know, this means you'll never be married. You have Saturn in the fifth house or something, you know. Not true. It's like, you know, it can be read so many different ways. So let's say in an old-timey book, let's say Saturn in the seventh house. So Saturn's the planet of, well, the seventh house is the house of marriage and partnerships. And in the old times, they'd say Saturn is being alone or having bad luck in something. And wherever it goes, it's bad luck. It's malefic, they'd say, you know. And so someone can say, oh, I looked at a book and it said I'll never be married because I have Saturn in the seventh house. Well, Saturn is also about wisdom and aging. So it could mean you marry somebody who's older than you are. Or it can mean you get married when you're older. You know, you get married in your 40s as opposed to in your 20s and get divorced and remarried in your 40s, whatever people do, you know. Or it's that you have very high standards around relationships, you know, and you don't just date 1,000 people. Like there's so many other ways to look at Saturn in the seventh house. So, you know, when people come in with me that way, it's like, no, we have to throw that out, you know. And the other thing, too, is that you could also work on yourself. Like if you have been having bad luck in relationships, you know, that people have dumped you or whatever, or cheated on you a whole bunch or something, and you've got Saturn in the seventh and you read an astrology book, see, I'll never get married. I have bad luck in relationships. Okay, let's look at the chart deeper. What's going on? It's like, is there some, we can look at the, like say if it's a woman, are there patterns of rejection from the father we can see in the chart? And how do we work with that through finding other strengths with the person, learning forgiveness techniques, looking at transits where new doors are opening up about self-value? Because what if you're going out with losers all the time and that's why they break up with you, because they're drunken losers or something, you know? It's like, let's look at this. You don't just say, oh, I get Saturn in the seventh, I read it in a book, and I'm going to have a miserable life. It's like, wait. So those are the kind of things we deal with the kind of undoing negative readings that people have had, or, again, these old-time concepts that are just like, what? No, the point is to grow. The point is not to sit there and say, my life sucks, you know? Wait till the next life to get married or have a good relationship. So, and relationships tend to be a key thing. And, you know, when I do esoteric astrology, you know, deeper levels of astrology, people still come with normal quote-unquote stuff, you know, the job, body issues or health or they need to lose weight or relationships or whatever. But what's the karma behind that? You know, what is the soul's quest behind having this issue? But people come with normal issues, but we try to look at it from a position of depth, you know?
Well, explain esoteric astrology a little bit more further in depth, because I know some of our listeners out there probably do not know what specifically that is.
Yes, thank you. I wasn't going to just leave that hanging. Well, the word esoteric means hidden, you know, and more in, you know, deep, looking deep. It's not on the surface. And the term esoteric astrology was really coined by Alice Bailey, who was originally from the Theosophical Society and moved on to form her own kind of spiritual school. And for esoteric astrology, they're looking at the way the soul is evolving. So a lot of times you don't have to, but it helps to think about reincarnation with astrology, that your soul is on a major journey, not just this lifetime, but there's so much experience behind the chart and why these things are going on, and different levels of answers that are possible. But even if you don't believe in past lives, the esoteric looks into a deeper why, and more of a sense of not just like, oh, good, I'm married, and that's the end of the story. Like, you know, it might be esoteric. It's like, well, who is the soul you're drawing? What is your life path together? You know, what would, if you want to have kids with this person, what is the children you're drawing in to the family, and the you know, it's like the meaning of life, but the meaning of life with that person. And so esoteric astrology explores those details, you know, as opposed to like, okay, you're married, end of story, you know, whatever, like the old days, or just, you know, be married and you're okay. It's like, that's just the beginning of the journey. If you find the partner, now it's like a whole new chapter opens up, and we can see, you know, why we've chosen that one, and how that person's helping us evolve into a deeper, more powerful soul. So esoteric astrology explores those things.
Now,
does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Okay.
If you're somebody who wants to study astrology and maybe look into astrology, so esoteric astrology would probably be the best way to go, correct?
Yes and no. I mean, esoteric astrology really needs you to know some basics, you know, because it's taking off from traditional astrology, let's say. And I think that good starting points give you some of the more, psychological, it's like moving into that psychological type astrology, like Robert Hand, you know, Tracy Marks, some of those people. There's a really good book by a woman named Myrna Loftus, which is Loftus. And she wrote a book called A Spiritual Approach to Astrology. And it's basic astrology, but it's with a depth to it, you know. And so learning some basics is important, but learning the basics along with the spiritual inclination helps. And then being able to go deeper into more meaning of those things. I mean, astrology is really hard to learn in a lot of ways. And I would say to people, if they're wanting to learn, learn with your own chart, you know, because when you start learning your own chart, just basics, and I think the temptation too with astrology is to get very complicated, and, you know, just starting with your sun sign and then branching into your moon sign and your rising sign. Just stay there for a little bit, you know, and understand what that's like. And then maybe looking at, you know, your own planets and understanding what it feels like to be you, and then look at charts of people you know very well, your parents, your kids, your best friend, your husband, or something like this. And then, you know, my mother also has a Leo moon or whatever, and that's how she expresses it. And then you start to get familiar with what it's like to have those signs and planets and things. And you start real simple like that. And a lot can be experienced from that simplicity. I mean, charts are deceptively simple, and because people want to dive into all this stuff, you know, like asteroids and, you know, whatever, world astrology and what does this mean and all this stuff. So it's like just keeping it really simple is not lame to do that, you know. But when you jump into the esoteric, it can be very overwhelming. It's just like, what? You know, I mean, even when I started studying it, I was like, what are you talking about? You know, it's a lot to grasp in certain ways. So keeping it really simple and seeking out a very positive astrology teacher or a very positive astrology book that isn't just like, you're stuck with a crappy chart or something, you know. That's fatalistic stuff. You just throw that book out. You know, just no. That's just old stuff. You know, we move and shake at this time in history.
Do you ever find that you have somebody who comes in and who, like, literally tells you, I really love my chart. I feel like I have the best chart ever.
You know, I don't get a lot of people who know their chart that well. don't know if I've ever had someone say that. It's, I think that people who are into astrology pick on their own charts. They might say, I really like this part of my chart. Like, I know there's parts of my chart I really like. And then there's parts I'm like, ugh, I wish I could just change that one, you know. So people who know anything about astrology know it's a mixed bag for anybody. And they tend to be harder on themselves and say, my chart stinks. You know, and I have to say, no, it doesn't. You got this, or this is the way you could look at that thing you don't like. And, oh, okay, you know.
I was just curious because, I mean, I know I've looked at my chart before, and I there's things I love about my chart and I love about myself. And then there's things that I know that, you know, okay, yeah, I am a very stubborn person. You know, that's something that I have to work on. There's always points that you have to work on. But I was just curious because a lot of people who don't understand astrology or even understand just a little bit of it, they're always like going, well, I don't like this in my chart and I don't like that. And you mean I'm never going to get married? And I'm just wondering if you ever had anybody who come in and did like, you know, came in and did the complete opposite, like, I love myself.
They probably wouldn't come. They're probably some a negative type Leo, right? Too much ego or something. I have not had that, and maybe they wouldn't be seeking a reading if they were. I don't know. It sounds pretty narcissistic, maybe. Because I think the people, at least who come to me, are wanting personal growth. And you know, usually people that want personal growth, are, they pick on themselves, you know, because they see where they need to grow, right? So maybe it's just my type of clientele. There might be people that go to other astrologers and say, everyone in my life is ridiculous. I got this great chart. Why are they stupid? But I haven't had that. But you know what's funny to me is that, you know, like as an Aquarius, I love being an Aquarius. I think it's great. You know, those sort of things I think kind of are stupid about being an Aquarius myself, when I see it myself. But, you know, I think I was taken down one time where, and I think the person was a Cancer. I'm just like, oh, my God, I hate Aquarians because they're so blah, blah. Like something I really liked about myself. Like they're just so emotionally removed or something. And I like that about myself. Like I can examine my feelings and get past them or something. And this, like you said, you're a Cancer. You know, the Cancers can be like, I hate Aquarians. They're so removed from their feelings. So what seems like an asset to me might be a liability to another chart, you know, person with a different chart. They might say, no, your chart sucks. Your chart's not good at all. So, you know.
One of my previous best friends, she's not a friend of mine anymore, but she was born right on the cusp of Aquarius Pisces. But she's actually considered more of Aquarius. And I was born on the cusp of Cancer Gemini, but I am considered a Cancer. So she's so much more bubbly. She was always so much more bubbly than me. She'd just lay it out there, and then she'd be like, well, why can't you do the same thing? And I never resented her for it. I never had a problem with it. But it just goes to show the differences in people, you know, the differences in charts and differences in signs and so forth and so on.
You know, I have a funny example that when I lived in Kansas City for a number of years, there was an astrologer there, a Scorpio. He had a lot of Scorpio. We were very good friends, but he had Scorpio, and he had a lot of Saturn. It was very intense, and he was a little bit pessimistic about stuff. He was definitely hard truth, you know. And in my chart, I'm an Aquarius, and I have a lot of Jupiter. Jupiter's the opposite of Saturn. You know, it's like I take a positive spin on things, even if you're having a crap transit. It's like, how can this be good? You know, how can I spin this good for a person? And so what's funny is I'd have people come to me and they'd say they went to the other one and he was just so negative. And then people would go to him and say, that Luna Michael, she can be so fluffy or she's so positive about everything. Why is everything good news with her? So we would laugh at, you know, somebody would come to me saying they didn't like his style and they'd go to him and say they wanted more, like, I don't know, bad news or something I wasn't giving them. So we would laugh, you know. So I'm an astrologer that, you know, I'm definitely very strong and serious about things, but I'm not going to tell people. I'll say to people, this could be kind of tricky. I will be open with people about a relationship. I mean, if you come to me and say, I just married this guy, I'd be like, okay, let's look at how this can work. If you just met the guy and you had 2 days, you say, I think this is the love of my life, I'd say, you know what? You need to go the other way, and this is why. And I would tell you. But I'm not going to say that to someone who just got married. I, you know, have to, already in the karma, right? So let's see how I can give them some guidelines. But you can't just slam somebody and say, you did this, you know, you should have married him. This is a tough piece of karma or something. So I try to give people, I have to meet them where they're at, but tell them something very helpful. Because just going into a really hard transit, I can say, you know what, this is going to be kind of challenging for you for a few years. This is what's going to come out of it. This is how you can feel empowered going through it. You know, but I'm not going to say, oh, it's fine, you know, but, you know, I want to get people, I want to empower people through, because there are tough things that happen to us in life, obviously, and there's tough transits that come around. But it doesn't have to be the worst thing that ever happened to you. It can be the making of you. It can be freeing you from things. It can be, you know, so I try to have that attitude that we're all evolving toward higher and better, you know, but it was just funny with that other astrologer because he always gave kind of that dum-dum-dum sort of thing, and I guess some people want dum-dum-dum, but I'm not that person. So we would just laugh about how our charts, you know, just we were this way when we did astrology, you know. So
now you talk about predictions, you know, and giving predictions. Talk a little bit about free will, because I know a lot of people out there feel like if it's in their chart, they're stuck with it, you know. And I know you tapped on that before, but what do you feel mm-hmm. about the principle of free will?
Oh, yeah, interesting. I guess I feel like with free will, let's say you have to go to the 12th grade, you know, you're forced to go to school, right, or whatever. You're in 12th grade, but when you're in 12th grade, you get more choices. You can take basket weaving, or you can take wood shop, you know, or you can take whatever, but you got to take something, you know. So I feel like with free will, it's like, let's say you, this is sort of interesting, let's say with a transit. Let's say a Mars transit. Mars can be, like, again, the old days, it could be, you're going to break your leg, you know, and it would say things like that in astrology books, you know, or you could, something dramatic is going to happen. Well, yeah, you could potentially have an accident when you're having a Mars transit. You could also argue with somebody. And you could also face yourself, confront yourself about something in yourself. You know, so the idea with a Mars transit is, let's say, a release of energy. So how do you want to do it? Lowest level of awareness might be you go out and break your leg, you know, and some energy was expressed in an unconscious way. Another way energy could be expressed is you argue with somebody and then you find out that you need to compromise with each other about a certain thing and resolve something. Or you could do it internally and just face something about yourself and say, I got to deal with this bad habit or something. But it's all been a sort of confrontation and a release of energy. The confrontation could be with your leg and the pavement that broke your leg, or, you know, so it's something happened. But when you are more conscious, and not that junk doesn't happen, like you break your leg when you're conscious all the time, and sometimes things happen, but there's millions of ways you could spin that transit and have that experience. You know, the point is getting the lesson. The point is getting a piece of spiritual growth. And maybe that's where I feel like that's not free will. If you need to learn something, like if you need to get credits to graduate from the 12th grade, you need to get the credits. But you can do it the way you're wanting to do it. So your free will comes in, how conscious am I going to be? How aware am I going to be about myself? And how alert am I to what's going on around me? And then that helps you utilize the transits that are happening to you, and also utilizing your own chart. You know, like I said about the Saturn in the seventh house. It's just like, I'm never going to get married. So you never go on dates? Like, what's that all about? You know, why isn't it examining myself, and why do I get with people who control me? What do I need to change so that I feel more empowered and don't choose people who dominate me? You know, so it's the free will needs to be used properly, but within a certain area. I feel like we kind of choose before we're born. I need to work on relationships. So we've chosen that before we're born, and then we're sort of in a situation in this life where we have relationship issues. So it could feel not like free will because we're having these relationship issues, but I feel we did choose it. And then the free will comes while we're in this life, again, how aware am I going to be? How much responsibility am I going to take about it? How am I going to approach it? What's my viewpoint on it? That can change a whole lot, and we use our free will in that approach. And does that make sense? Or is that too long of an answer? Sorry.
No, that makes sense.
Sorry if I'm long-winded. That's such a tough thing with the free will, because it's like, yeah, I especially have some trouble with my Indian clients because, you know, I definitely practice Western astrology, which is when we use the outer planets and certain things, but there's another type of astrology that's, they call it Vedic or Hindu astrology, and it's very fatalistic. It's not, it just, there are more Vedic people who tend toward more depth and stuff, but traditionally it's very cut and dry. And a lot of the Indian clients, you know, the grandmother goes, gets the reading as we were in India and then reports back, and they come to me like, you know, this is going to happen and there's no way out, you know, and it's like, okay, hang on here, you know, do you want to view it differently? And so that's always intriguing because in India, as a culture, for a long time, there wasn't free will. You're born into a caste. You're done, you know. If you're that level, you're that level. And so the astrology culturally was reflecting that, you know, at the time. And so I feel bad since those Indian people. I said, well, if you are living in the U.S., do you want to look at it differently? It is a different culture. Do you want to feel there's more choices here? Because it can be hard just to hear something harsh from an astrologer in a different mode of astrology. And so, like, again, there's other ways. I don't want to knock Hindu astrology at all, but it just traditionally is much more cut and dry fatalistic, and that was sort of the purpose of it. And again, it evolved out of a different sort of culture. You know, Americans are all about free will, you know, and manifest destiny and all that. So our Western astrology reflects that in the Western society kind of idea, you know. So, but that's always tricky when someone comes with that hard idea about themselves. And I feel that's my job as an astrologer. How else can we see this? You know, and some people say, wow, I never thought of Saturn being like that, or Saturn being a teacher, or, you know, I just thought it was a bad thing. It's like, no. And, yeah.
Now, I know that a lot of people believe that intuition and astrology go hand in hand. So what is your perception on that? What is the difference? And, you know, does it go together?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that's so interesting because some people ask that, are you psychic? And I'm like, no. I mean, again, maybe, I don't know. But I have, it's hard for me because I'm so, I've such a long time of having the astrology knowledge and I've done so many readings. It's like, what is my experience that just comes off my, what comes out of being very experienced and what is intuitive? And, I definitely feel the more you work in any realm, the more your faculties open up. So there's, and I feel like when I'm, the clients who come to me are looking for more depth and have done work on themselves, and I can maybe access different dimensions of consciousness with them because they're open to that. And I guess, and you know, that's where the intuition comes in. And again, but again, then how much of that is knowing astrology that deep? So I feel it is a blend. Really when you start doing astrology, you sit, you know, it's like if you got somebody in front of you and you got the chart, it's like, you know, you don't have time to like pick through a book and, you know, cut and paste these ideas together and present them to the person, you start finding something flows out of you and you go, oh, I never read that in the book before. And the person goes, yeah, that's so true. That's how it is. And you say, oh, you know, that was that experience or is that my own take on it? And your own take on it pretty much is your intuition. But it definitely blends. And most really experienced astrologers will say it just starts to blend. And some ideas are just there and you just trust how it feels. And you just say it and the people say yes, or people call you later and say, oh my God, that was so whatever. And I was, oh, yeah, I forgot I said that thing. But I think for me where the intuition would come in, I do really believe in past lifetimes and, or even just giving people metaphors about things. Like I'll say something like, you know, it's almost like you feel like you're a slave to this person. They say, oh my God, I say that all the time to that person, you know? And then we say, huh, well, let's look. Maybe there was a past life where you were their slave or they were your slave. And now you feel that, you know, it's a role reversal or something. And if they're interested in past lives, we can explore that. But sometimes pieces pop up to me when I look at the chart that point me toward a past life issue. And that I say it to the person, I'll say, I don't know if you believe in past lives or not, but here's a story. You know, how does that story feel? And they say, that feels exactly like it is with us, you know. And we can say, well, okay, even if you don't believe in a past life and this was your past life, how could we fix this? How could we alter it? How can we heal it? So in that level, the intuition really plays in for me. But for other people, like, it's so funny that some people, especially when I read in the store, you know, I would just be doing basic astrology, simple thing for somebody, you know, just starting out, and like, you know, like say they get a friend in the store that turn out, oh my God, it's amazing how much she knows, you know, but it's like, it's just basic astrology, it's not magic, but somebody who doesn't know astrology thinks you're like, you know, like some sort of guru or something, and you're like, duh, it's just, you know, moon and Capricorn or something, you know. It's like you might have felt like, you know, you came into the world and everyone was busy and you had to make your own way and you probably got a paper route when you were, you know, 8 years old. I did. That's amazing. It's like, that's everyone moon in Capricorn, you know, or something. But they think it's incredible stuff. So there's a lot that people think is wild that is really just textbook astrology. But so it can seem more magical than you really are to some people.
Hey, that's not always a bad thing.
No, and it's not. And, you know, that's where the thing is that some astrologers get overcomplicated. And you could just say, you know, for one person, you could even do a whole hour on that person having moon in Capricorn. They felt unwanted as a child. They overcompensate for things. They're always, you know, human doing rather than human being. They feel like they're not valuable to somebody if they can't help them or do something for them or buy something for them. You know, that's a whole thing. You know, how does that affect their relationships? How does that affect their self-esteem? How does it affect their relationship with their kids? Blah, blah, blah. You know, how does it affect their relationship with God? You know, you could spend a whole hour on that. You know, so you don't have to know every little thing and nitpick someone's chart to death to do a really good session for them. I mean, and it's whatever that person's resonating with, you know, that depth issue is, you know, ready for healing. And you can give so much information on one tiny, tiny portion of the chart. And that's why with my clients, I've read for certain people for 25 years and we're, you know, still more to tell them. So, you know, of course, people are always evolving and things are happening, but, you know, it's your soul. The chart's just a map of your soul. It's always deepening and processing and evolving. So there's always more to say and discover, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I see that we're starting to run a little bit low on time. So why don't you talk about your clients and your sessions and how people can connect with you for sessions and find more information about you.
Okay. Well, people maybe just be tuning in and not know, my name is Aluna Michaels, and my website is alunamichaels.com. And on my website, I do have little videos for each sun sign. And it doesn't have to be your sun sign. If you know your moon sign, you can look up your moon sign in that too. You know, like if you got the Capricorn moon, you can look up my Capricorn piece. I also have a monthly forecast video and a written one that you can look up your own sign. So my website has a lot to kind of get to know me. My sessions are half hour, an hour. Some people do an hour and a half session, which seems a little long, but sometimes they like that. And we can cover a lot in a session. I mean, a lot of people definitely feel bad when they want to talk about relationships and basic things and job and stuff, but it's definitely the taking off point of, you know, how is the universe teaching you in these day-to-day things? And we can do a lot of discovery in a half an hour, but a lot of people prefer an hour. We can look at other people's charts with yours. It's best to know your exact time of birth, but you don't have to. It's very helpful to know your exact day of birth with the year. Don't lie to an astrologer and tell your wrong year because the chart will be wrong. So you have to tell your right age. My mother had things like that. People would lie about their age and they'd say, you're not doing a good reading. And then she'd find out they lied about their age. It was like, well, duh. So we want to, you know, hope for the exact time of birth, but you don't have to worry about that if you don't have it. And other people, you don't have to have their exact time of birth to ask about them, but you do need their day and year. So we can do a lot with other people in your life. Look at timing. I like to look at, you know, in depth, maybe 2 years in the future, 2.5 years. It gets a little theoretical after that, but and looking at maybe a year or two previously to see what you're coming out of, what patterns are there. And I like to show people like ways that they're going to be resolving issues and how you would be reaping good karma in the future, you know, and how these windows of opportunities are coming and how to make the best of them and how to improve your chart through these windows of opportunity, which are the mathematical energies that are coming at you from the other planets. So that's what we do. And people can email me from there or call me, and we can do Skype sessions. I do a lot of international people Skype, but I even do local people or have a baby sleeping or something. We can Skype, and I do a lot over the phone too. And right now, you know, it's wonderful. I have a home office too, so.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining me today and allowing me to speak with you and interview you. I definitely feel more informed about astrology than I'm sure our listeners do too. Is there any last thing you would like to leave us with?
I guess that, the universe loves you and wants you to grow and is wanting to give you the best information possible, that your chart is not some sort of prison you're stuck with or stuck within. It's like it's all moving you ahead. So just to have that idea when you're looking at astrology, that these are lessons to move you ahead into greater joy and understanding of your soul.
Well, thank you so much, Aluna, and you've been wonderful. You know, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Oh, thanks for having me, Courtney. Thanks for doing your show.
Thank you, everybody, for listening today. You've been listening live with In Touch Interviews with Aluna Michaels. If you are ever interested in being on Body, Mind, Spirit Radio or hosting your own show, you can contact me at 734-513-6137, or you can email me at radio@bodymindspiritguide.com. Once again, I wanted to thank Aluna for being here today. You can definitely contact her to get your chart done and talk to her about what your chart pertains and foresees. And I want to wish everybody a happy June. Thank you and bye-bye.